Greetings. Welcome back to another Truth Factor discussion. It's time we come together on Thursday to factor the truth of God's Word into our lives first, and then hopefully into your life as well. We enjoy studying together. We'll talk about things that we don't always get to talk about, but we want to include you in these studies. And so if you find it beneficial, that is wonderful. If you disagree with something that we say, let us know. If you've joined us through our Facebook page, the live stream there, then drop us a comment on that live video feed, and we'll see that and do our best to bring that thought into our discussion. Our YouTube channel has the same thing, a little chat area there on that live video feed. So drop it in there, and we'll bring it in. You can even email us. You can send all emails to questions@truthfactorlive.com, questions@truthfactorlive.com, or you can email us individually. If Brian says something you think is incredibly smart or not, you can send it to him, brian@truthfactor.com. Brendan, Paul, all the others are just the same as well, truthfactor.com. All right, so let's see. With all that being said and done, what we're going to do today is we're going to continue with the subject that we started last week, and that is five ways religious leaders fail. Five ways religious leaders fail. And what we talked about last week in the first three areas there, we talked about being arrogant and self-righteous. Oftentimes will bring preachers down. Many times a preacher or a religious leader will hold to a point, not because they honestly see that it's true, but because of pride, because of they're afraid of the way they will look to other people. They don't want to be rejected. They don't want to be named in the pulpit. You know, some preachers will name names in the pulpit. And they're too arrogant to let go of that, and too self-righteous. The second thing we talked about, lacking love and respect for the brethren. That's a big one. Many religious leaders have failed their responsibility because they didn't love the Lord. They didn't love and respect the brethren. The third we talked about last week was concerned with popularity. That overlaps a little bit what I mentioned there with the first one there. But many religious leaders have been more concerned with popularity, and therefore the truth is then sacrificed. Even the congregation and the well-being of the people, spiritual well-beings, are sacrificed as well. All righty, Brian, Brendan, any thoughts or comments about those previous three before we begin with the next one?
Nope.
Okay. All right, so let's see. Let me get right here. Okay, so in the next area, we're going to be, I'll tell you what, Brian, if you would, let me go ahead and have you to introduce the next section here.
And that would be fail number four, correct, John?
Fail number four, that is correct.
Yeah. So fail number four speaks to something that probably most people have seen elders, deacons, preachers stumble over. And it's behaving in a worldly way. Particularly, maybe you knew a preacher that had to step down because he had had an affair or had some sexual misconduct, or an elder who stepped down because he had been caught up in covetousness or worldliness in some fashion. Somebody who let their job take over their life and lost all spiritual distinction. There's a lot of ways that the world comes in. And we talk about the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life. And really, we've talked about the pride of life in some of the things we've talked about. But to be fair, we're probably speaking in a great deal about the lust of the flesh in this circumstance. It's a great danger that a lot of people experience, and I might suggest that it's a danger that the Apostle Paul warned Timothy explicitly about in 2 Timothy chapter 2, whenever he was giving him the, what I sometimes like to think of as the qualifications of an evangelist. He says that he is to flee youthful lusts in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 22. And that point perhaps helps us to understand that this is a danger that oftentimes spiritual leaders fall into, is that when they are preaching the things that they need to be preaching about these things, they fail to guard themselves against these dangers. And because of that, they then lose sight or lose control of themselves. And it's such a terrible thing to think about, the great damage that that's done. And as I said, we see it in a variety of ways. We see men that become covetous and want more and more, and pretty soon the pursuit of those things is drawing them away from spiritual choices. Their, you know, whether it's their work that they're pursuing these things, whether it's their you know, other things that love of money. No doubt that that's why the Apostle Paul gives Timothy such a large exposition on it in 1 Timothy chapter 6, when he says you've got to be careful and warn those who have wealth about the pursuit of wealth and the dangers it presents. And he goes on to say that the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, and many people have fallen away, have lost their way because of that. That love of money is such a dangerous thing that people get into. We also have to acknowledge that that church leaders are not immune to the dangers of addiction or things like that, whether it's alcohol or even today drugs. You've probably all know people who serve as leaders in the church, and they struggled with addictions. Of course, they usually kept it secret, but they struggled with intoxicating things, and ultimately those things. And certainly keeping it a secret is dangerous. One important idea might be that a lot of times church leaders are afraid to confess their sins to one another, that James 5 paragon, because they're afraid that by doing so, they're actually acknowledging a failure in leadership. And so there has to be a good balance in how it is that a leader can confess their sins and seek the help of their brethren, at the same time still leading effectively. It's an important thing that a church leader should have a sense of with their relationship with the congregation, the sense that they're able to talk about sin in a personal way without that without being held accountable in a unique way. I have to say that kind of carefully, that, you know, we are held accountable and that, for example, elders are to be blameless. But at the same time, understanding that the struggle with temptation doesn't necessarily mean the same thing as a struggle with a sin or sinful conduct that then disqualifies somebody from that church leadership position. So those are my opening thoughts there, and I'd like to hear what the other guys have to say about this.
Well, I'll piggyback on that, you know, to your point there about leaders being able to confess perhaps sin or misjudgment or whatever it may be. You know, we have an example of this in the Old Testament. You know, who do we have more respect for? King Saul, who in 1 Samuel 15 just dived and dodged around the issue and, you know, minimized his own failures as a leader and was still very prideful. Says, no, I did obey God. And Samuel has to go, no, you didn't. Or do we have more respect for David, that when he was confronted with his sin by Nathan, David said, yeah, I sinned. And yet David, when you look at the whole of his life, he's still called a man after God's own heart, because what does a godly man do when he's confronted with sin? He repents of it. He deals with it. He takes steps to not do it again, right? And there were some consequences of David's sin, just like we have to deal with consequences today. The crown was not removed from him, although it was from Saul. But unfortunately, the sword would not depart David's house due to that sin. Today, there might be a season where a spiritual leader, depending on the fault, depending on the sin, may have to take a season away from leadership, maybe not permanently. But there could be certain sins where he is disqualified and cannot serve again. That doesn't mean his faith is somehow lacking. It doesn't mean that he is somehow a bad Christian. It just means that that's a consequence of this particular action. And one more thought here, too, about perhaps how leaders deal with things. A point that one of my elders made that I had not considered before, that each elder needs to be in submission to the other elders. There's mutual submission there. We're taking the eldership, for example. And so I could see, per Matthew 18, if a man is caught in sin or whatever it may be, the eldership might decide to handle that among themselves to begin with. If it persists, then yes, the procedures outlined there in Matthew 18 are to be followed. If it's a public and egregious sin, well, Timothy was instructed to rebuke those who keep on sinning in the presence of all, that the rest would be fearful of sinning. And so there is definitely a standard that we're all held to. There are definitely certain sins that if they're of a public nature or particularly egregious, that they need to be dealt with publicly for the good of the flock. But, you know, this is a big area that many leaders fail, because I think to piggyback of what Brian said, is they fail to take seriously the demands of sanctification and holiness. You know, the Apostle Paul, if I might go a little bit longer, the Apostle Paul wasn't immune to these things. There's at least two things he may have struggled with. And one is in Romans 7, he said, I would not have known coveting had the law not told me. So why coveting? Some have speculated maybe that was what Paul was struggling with. You know, that might be a fair inference there, because it comes up quite a bit in his writings. The other one is in 2 Corinthians, he's told us that he was given a thorn in his flesh, that he would not exalt himself. And so pride's a very common temptation for many in leadership. And that's because everyone's looking at you for the answers. Everyone's looking at you for the decision process. And it doesn't mean we have to always give an answer if we don't have it. Doesn't mean we always have to make the decision if we're not sure what to do. But that can feed pride. And so there's a reason why the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 9, 26 and 27 said, I run in such a way as not without aim. I box in such a way as not hitting the air. I buffet my body and make it my slave, that after I have preached to others, I myself would not be disqualified. And really, that's the antidote, is if we need to take seriously first that we are Christians first before anything else. For husbands, fathers, preachers, deacons, elders, you're a Christian first. And you need to make sure your own spiritual house is in order before you think about even telling others how to order their spiritual house, to use that metaphor there. So, and it can be very easy to do. So a man who's in leadership needs to have a very keen awareness of self and what his limitations are and what his temptations are, and needs to take steps to guard against that and not be afraid to say no in order to make sure your own spiritual well-being is being strengthened and preserved, because you can get to a point where the pressures can get to too much, where, and Satan loves it when you're pressured and busy, because that's when he comes in and strikes with the temptation there. So those are my thoughts.
I think it's a good point. The Lord chose the apostles to preach, and we make an assumption about Timothy when Paul talked to Timothy and everything, Titus as well. Some, maybe, depending on how you want to look at that. It concerns me sometimes when you have these older preachers see a young man appears to have a love for the Word of God, interest in studying, and has a way of delivering the message, and their words are, you need to become a preacher. We need to start training you right now to preach. Okay. Well, if preaching was pretty much what we see in the scriptures, where you studied the word, you grew within the word, you then imparted the message to the members. Okay. Then I could see where that definitely, let's push that. We need more men with more knowledge of the word of God, imparting that knowledge to faithful men so they might teach others also. But in the culture we live in, and this is nothing new, the role of what we would perceive as the preacher has become the role of the pastor. And I don't mean pastor as far as the elders of a congregation, okay? But in the denominational world aspect of the pastor, you pretty much run the church, you make decisions for the church, you go to the hospitals, you go here, you go there, you teach the youth groups, you do this, you know, and you become the jack of all trades type thing there. And that's when you begin to open up the exposure of these character flaws, if they exist within your life, you know. And then on top of that, support. I've often wondered about covetousness within the life of preachers being connected to an inefficient support from the brethren at times. As preacher years ago, I often thought it was a funny and interesting example. He opposed to gambling, and I understand that completely. But every single time the grocery store had some type of scratch off, any type of thing, you know, any type of game that wasn't considered gambling, he would always go to. He would be a part of. And I often wondered, could the problem of covetousness still be there? You know, I'm not saying it was, because I didn't know his heart, you know. But anyway, just because the problem, I guess what I'm trying to say is sometimes we may put too much responsibility on young men before they have the time to develop their character and to come to know themselves, you know. Go ahead, Brendan. Yeah.
And to that, John, I wasn't privy to last week's program, but we have to understand that I think these failures are a two-way street.
Okay.
That the blame, I would say, largely rests on the men, but also as Christians and members and church, you know, we need to recognize that perhaps there's some trends, there's some expectations, there's some habits that we all have that are not healthy for men in leadership. You know, to your point, I learned a lot about preaching that kind of shocked me about, oh, that people expect me to do that. I thought there's been a few times, and not necessarily here, but there's been a few times where I've said in exasperation in my office, like, I just want to teach. That's all I want to do is just teach. And you know, and part of this is like, I'm going back to point three, concern with popularity. Well, that's a failure that gets brought on because there's a culture within the church that does popularity contests with preachers. To your point there about adequate support, this is a generational thing, and I am so thankful for the previous generations of what they've done because it's gotten so much better. But it is, and I'm just going to be selfish here, and I'm just going to say it, it is incumbent upon the congregation to support a man adequately enough to where he is not having to worry about paying his child's medical bill or getting groceries or how he's going to cover his taxes. Because when his support is not adequate enough with that, guess what? Worry, anxiety, fear sets in because he's a father. He's got to be a provider. He wants to be honest with the law, so he's got to make sure he's got to pay his taxes. And it's just sometimes a support situation drives a man to have to work 2-3 extra jobs. And this is not to condemn those who've chose bivocational ministry. You know, there's those men out there that sure are doing good work with that.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the old reasoning I heard from older preachers about why the preacher's pay was so low. Oh, we need to keep them humble. Ooh, there's plenty in a preacher's life that's going to keep them humble. Low pay is not one that he needs to be worried about. And again, yeah, make no mistake, I'm not saying he needs to be driving Cadillacs and the richest member of the congregation. But adequate support to cover his needs so he can focus on the work of preaching and teaching. And to what you said, John, is there is a mindset that has slipped into the church that we treat preachers like pastors. I believe it was Max Dawson who said the biggest problem with the church today is that preachers are eldering, elders are deaconing, and the deacons don't know what to do. We've gotten the New Testament church organization all askew. And so, and to your point, again, I would love to see younger men start preaching. And I think so many of them have been told the horror stories or told not to, or here's what you're going to face, to where it's like, I don't want to do that anymore. When they might be very gifted communicators, or they may be really good at personal work. They just might have that personality that makes people at ease. And the church has lost valuable men because of that. And really, I think part of it has to do is I think also we've gotten it backwards as far as where young men should preach. Oftentimes the young men go to small congregations with no spiritual leadership, and so they get put in positions where they're sometimes looked at as the pastor. And really, those congregations should be for the older men who've been around a little bit longer, and the younger men should go to the congregations with elders and are bigger so they can have the time to develop and to grow. Because I've just known a few men who, they survived it, but they've been at small congregations where they put them through the ringer, and they really questioned whether or not they wanted to keep preaching. And it wasn't because they weren't good at what they did. It's because of just how they were mistreated, or the unrealistic expectations. And you can only handle so much of that stress put on you before Satan comes in again and starts tempting you with all these other vices.
Well, that's a good point. It's especially when you're younger, okay? Now, you've got a few young people who are very stout, okay? And they've gone through enough in life already. But I know with me, I now would handle something that came across as very critical. I would handle it now differently than I would have when I was 25. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just because you have experience. And something else you said there, when we're talking about the aspect of support, I have seen situations where a congregation doesn't fully support it, or maybe let's say the local evangelist has to get outside support. And he decides, you know, I want to earn a little bit more money so I can prepare for the future. So I'm going to take up a trade and work a job on the side. Oh, no, you can't do that. You got to be full time. But you're not supporting me full time. I know, but you're getting outside support, so you should be full time. I had a preacher tell me when I first started preaching, and I didn't do this way per se, as he was recommending. He really recommended every young preacher work in the secular field for 3 or 4 years to get to know what it's like. So that when you get up there and you start preaching to people about being there every time the doors are open, you know firsthand the difficulties, the challenges. You know, when you're working 60 hours a week and you're struggling to get off on Wednesday nights, you know, so you can relate to it better than the guy that every time, you know, his work is Sunday and Wednesday. And so going to church, that's no problem. I'm there all the time with my 18 kids, you know. Sorry. But the reason why we talk about this is because of the point. These things, and Brendan already said this, when you throw this onto the shoulders of a man, whether he's single, has a wife, trying to raise children, a lot of these unnecessary challenges can create issues, can lead to addiction, can lead to covetousness, can even lead to sexual immorality, depending on what he turns to for the release, what he turns to, as he would say, for the dopamine and stuff like that, to feel good. Or if there is someone in his life who will listen to him complain and then they begin to feed on that and take it and kind of fall in love, you know? We don't know any preachers that have never done anything like that, do we? I don't know if I asked that question right. That's been a pervasive issue, both within what we would say within the church, Churches of Christ, but even in the denomination world. You know, think about the Catholic Church. Think about old Jimmy Swaggart from years ago, to name a name. You know, it's sad.
And to that point, John, just real quick, is preaching is a lonely profession. And if we might use that terminology. And it's just because a lot of the reasons we've said, I've had some preachers tell me do not make friends in the congregation. And that came from a place where they were burned by wow. people they thought they could trust. Or, you know, there's sometimes I'm not married, but I've been told by married preachers that it's a hard decision. Do they share with their wives all the issues that they know what's going on, or do they keep it to themselves? Well, that's your companion, confidant, but you don't want to put her in an unfair position where she knows things that no one else does. And the same goes true with deacons' wives or elders' wives. And so sometimes what's really a big stress in your life, you can't share with your closest companion because you don't want to unfairly burden her. Yeah. And so there's a lot of potential pitfalls that come just by the nature of the work. And if I may shamelessly plug this, you know, I have Homer Haley's old preacher training outlines that I've seen in Barry Kirchhoff's book, and a lot of the material I've read on it will make this point tacitly, but I think it really needs to be hit home, is as preachers, you need to put a premium on your physical health. And I'm not saying that as some form of aestheticism or, you know, whatever it is, but as the body goes, so goes the mind. And if you're in failing health or you have a chemical imbalance or your vitamins aren't right, that can cause other issues that might make you more susceptible to temptation. You know, yeah. And it's important because of that, whatever it may be, and to have some sort of outlet outside of church, another subject outside of the Bible that you enjoy doing, and you're doing just for sake of yourself, because I've speaking from personal experience. As a single guy, when I go home, there's no wife and kids. So what do? Well, I can read more. I can study more. Well, you can do that to an excess where someday somebody asks, well, what do you like to do for fun? I'm like, what do I like to do for fun? And this goes back to Ecclesiastes and our study there, that there's a time for everything under the sun. Yeah. And, you know, you find those good outlets, you find a couple subjects that aren't Bible related that you enjoy reading or studying on, you will find that it is refreshing, it energizes you, and it'll make you more effective and more robust to defend against temptation, because you're in good health. And we're not getting good health for the sake of health. We're getting good health that so that we can be of longer, more effective service to our God. That's the goal. Because we're in one of the most stressful professions that there is. I mean, that's just the reality of it. We rank up there with doctors and lawyers, as far as the pressures they get put on. Some of it rightly, a lot of it wrongly, as we've talked about, but it is the reality. So,
I had one more thought. I know we need to move on here, Sue John. One more thought that jumps into my mind. It's important that people who are leaders in the church appreciate that leadership isn't the definition of their Christian walk, and that stepping out of that role should be something they should feel fairly comfortable doing. And I say that carefully because I've seen elders that whenever something happened in their life, and let's say either maybe they weren't qualified anymore, or more likely that they just were over, Brendan brought really great comments there about being overtaxed, that it just became too much. And one thing that occurs to me a lot, that I would have added another point and things you need to watch out if you're a leader is don't neglect your family. But they may be neglecting their family and they have to turn to that. It should be an easy transition. It should be easier than it typically is for a person to step down as being an elder, a deacon, or a preacher. But unfortunately, I've seen men step down as elders and their whole walk of faith falls apart because they defined themselves in that role. Preachers especially have a problem because for us, this is our vocation too. And if I step out of preaching, I'm going to have a difficulty switching vocation around. But to be honest, every leader in the church needs to appreciate that there may and almost certainly will be a time where they have to release that leadership. They have to step aside. If nothing else, because Brendan brought up a great point about reaching a time and age where we're ineffective, where that has to step aside. We've probably all known preachers that have preached well past that age of effectiveness, that because or ability, maybe not age, but ability, mm-hmm. but they kind of have to because they made no other provisions, and that it should be something that we understand that if a man steps down as being an elder, he's in no way a failure. He is no way any less of a Christian. In fact, he may be giving us one more good leadership example of the idea that we're not defined by these positions. And as I said, John, you said it earlier that, training a preacher to have a vocation might be a good thing. I think it's a very good thing because I think any preacher who's in a position where I have to preach because this is all I can do, he's not going to be a truly godly leader. There's too much temptation to preach what people want to hear so that you can keep your position, to pursue better paying positions. You have all these desires and draw-ins. And frankly, even an evangelist ought to be in a position where they can say, I could step out of this, if I need to. I can move to something else if I need to, and, to keep up, that ability. Because if this is all I can do, there may be a challenge where I need to step out of this position of leadership, whether it's temptation, whether it's difficulty, health. And if I can't do it because I have no other way to do it, then I may have a problem. Our leadership shouldn't define us. And a congregation shouldn't look down on anybody who has stepped down, who has said, I can't serve as an elder anymore. I can't serve as a deacon. I can't be the evangelist anymore. I've heard of congregations when the evangelist stepped down, they said, well, what church is he going to go to? Because can't go here, used to be the preacher. And as shocking as that is, it's because just a lot of times we define somebody so much by their leadership position that we forget that that's explicitly contrary to the way Christ wanted these works and done, Matthew 23 or elsewhere.
Yeah. And to that point, Brian, just to illustrate that, a couple of weeks ago, one of my elders stepped down after 41 years serving as a shepherd. That's just amazing in of itself. But, the two remaining elders looked at each other and kind of joked and says, we have more former elders now in the congregation than we do have active elders. And since I've been here, I came here when there were six, all four of these men stepped down for various reasons. Two of the men, it was time. It was time to pass the torch to the next generation. It was time due to health. One individual as you point out, and is his mother was failing in her health. He was still chairman of the board of his company, and he was an elder and still trying to be a father. And one of those things had to go, and the eldership was the easiest one to go. And it was all understood that this was going to be temporary, that he would leave for a season, and when he was ready, if he was willing again, the chair was still open for him. It's just that was the time, and really everyone admired him for it, because here's somebody who's taking care of what God would have him to take care of at the appropriate time. We had five other elders, and so it wasn't a big concern. And so it's just, in fact, I think if you truly match the character portrait in 1 Timothy 3 and 2 Timothy 1, no one should be surprised. No one should look down upon the man if he decides to make that decision. Because if he was wise enough and godly enough to be put in, he should have the wisdom and the respect of the congregation that when he says, okay, now's the time I need to step away from this, it should still be the same man that no matter whether he's in that office or not.
But sometimes our pride gets the better of us, you know, and if the other elders or the congregation, whether you're serving as an elder, deacon, or just the preacher, decide that you need to step down from your capacity. Let's say something you don't see, but they do. I've seen feelings get hurt, you know, and validation, that's the new term, I guess, you hear in the last 15, 20 years. People get validation from this or that. I wonder, is it possible for preachers and elders, people in religious leaders, leadership position, to get a measure of validation from those roles, you know? And they come, it comes back to what Brian's talking about, defining themselves by that. Yeah. Okay. Well, we've got a few more minutes. I told you I would not be holding you past noon because we were chit-chatting and stuff first 15 minutes. So let's go ahead and go to the next one. Brendan, if you would introduce this and share your own thoughts on this, and then there's a few random thoughts we might try to bring in on the fifth one there. So let me know once you have it ready and you're ready to do.
Ready to go, and the audience should in no way take the next point as a failure on Truth Factor because we did not allot our time enough for this next point. So the next failure is lazy or poor time management. There is the old joke that, well, preachers only work one day a week. And that joke, unfortunately, does have a lot of truth in reality. There is a scores of men who did not do the work, who saw it as a cushy office job that they could get a paycheck and all I have to do is talk two or three times a week and that's fine. But spiritual leadership is a full-time job and it's a round-the-clock job. You're always on call. And there are men who have shipwrecked themselves because they did not learn how to manage their time properly. Now, in high school and in college, I was a chronic procrastinator. The saying was, if it's due tomorrow, I'll do it tomorrow. Well, that does not fly when you're a preacher or you're in leadership. And so this is one I'm very familiar with because early on, I knew that was a shortcoming of mine and I had to make changes. And so I hold to a little bit more rigid schedule than some other men, and I have planned work on each day, and it's how I'm able to overcome my tendency to put things off in order to do that. But, you know, some preachers, for example, are very studious, and they do a lot of writing and study and deep thought, and others they excel at personal communication, but some are lazy and even in their own study and their preaching. And this will normally show up because he might have a hobby horse that it seems like every single week it's the same lesson on the same subject. Or he may have a variety of topics that he preaches on, but they start sounding the same. It's the same two or three points that I need to get from every single lesson. Normally, that's a sign of he has not done it the adequate enough study to know the text and to preach it. Also, there's also another sign of or time management is if the sermons are too long or too short. Too short means he probably did not, again, spend enough time preparing and thinking through to have adequate enough material. And sometimes too long of a sermon indicates the same thing. In that, well, you're saying a lot of stuff, but really, are you saying anything at all? I've sat in college classes where it was an hour and a half lecture, and I walk out of the class, and I'm like, what did he talk about? What were the points? I couldn't tell it to you. Also, another sign of sometimes underpreparing and poor time management is they're preaching their dog more than the text. And what do I mean by that? The sermons are chock full of personal anecdotes, stories that are fun to listen to. But really, it seemed more like a gab session with the preacher than we talked about the text. And that could be a sign of that as well. Another one would be the preacher looks pretty haggard Sunday morning. Maybe that's not the right word for that, but it's the word I'm using. Because he's stayed up to 2-3 in the morning because he waited till Saturday to prepare his lessons. Now, caveat to that. There are some men that can do that. Brother Haley, for example, he would lock himself in his office at 8 a.m. on Saturday morning, and he would do all his lessons on Saturday. But he was ready to go, and he was rested and all that kind of stuff. Each man's going to be a little bit different, but the point was maybe he's waiting until the last minute to do all that stuff. And when you think about the work of spiritual leaders, so we've been talking a lot about preachers. Preachers in the church, at least 2 sermons a week, 2 classes, that's a lot of prep work. On average, and this is an average, sermons take 8 to 10 hours, depending on who you talk to. Some take less, some take more. So that's 20 hours. You might assume that maybe there's as much preparation for Bible class, maybe a little bit less. So already we're getting up there. But in addition to this, you need to be thinking about future classes, personal work. What studies are you conducting? If a man does not have a good use of his time, he's not going to be able to fulfill the work of evangelists and fulfill his ministry, as Paul told Timothy. Well, let's just take deacons. Deacons' primary role is that of benevolence and helping the needy saints. If we look at Acts 6 as a prototype of the work, their work's also in the name. Well, congregation, where it's got a lot of widows and shut-ins, that's a full-time job. And if a man does not allocate his time properly, the work of benevolence will hurt. Widows will get overlooked, and that's egregious, as it was in Acts 6. Think of shepherds. If they do not have an adequate handle of their time, sheep could wander off without ever being talked to. Members, as Christians who are hurting or despondent, if the man does not put a priority on his job and his time allotment, they may never receive the encouragement they need. Elders are supposed to be apt to teach. Maybe a man is also in the teaching rotation. If he doesn't rightly allocate his time, the classes might suffer no matter who he's teaching. And so, you know, there's a lot of blessings that come with preaching and other things. You have a lot of flexibility, but with that flexibility, sometimes comes the pitfalls of poor time management. Because there's always the temptation of, well, I can do it tomorrow. Well, eventually tomorrow runs out. And you need to do it today. And if you're not ready for it, it's going to show up eventually. Those are my thoughts on that.
Okay, I appreciate that. Looks like you put a lot of time and thought into that, or just was really good off the cuff. Well, see, so there are several layers to this, and I agree with what you're saying there. You may have someone that is super studious, and they're so busy working on other studies that here comes Saturday and they realize I've not developed this Sunday sermon. Okay. You could also have someone who gets so caught up in his personal life at home between building a house, going fishing, whatever, golfing, a lot of preachers golf. You know, you could have someone, and that's where the laziness kind of comes into. You know, poor time management would be the type to where, unless you're like someone like what you were referencing with Homer Haley, where, you know, instead of me spending my time going to the, like Brian, going to camping on Saturdays and stuff like that, I'm going to stay all day in the office, get my sermon done. But then when you look at his various commentaries that he did, you could tell that, you know, Brother Haley did do a lot of studies, didn't agree with everything he, you know, taught, obviously. But
no.
But the preachers, though, that have fun during the week or goof off during the week, and now with the internet, it takes you, what, 10 minutes to find another sermon, pull it down. If they're nice to you, they've already developed charts for you.
You know? Well, to that point, John, Steve Higginbotham, he a preacher in the church, and he wrote an article a couple of years ago about the sin of plagiarism, where he found out a guy just a couple miles up the road from where he preached for the last, like, 10 years or so, had been preaching his sermons verbatim, down to the illustration, without just for the last 10 years, just the week after Steve would preach something, it would pop up on this congregation's website. And it's like, you know, there's nothing wrong with taking an idea and developing it and giving credit where credit's due. It's lazy, dishonest, and downright sinful for you just to start plagiarizing and preaching, because it, two things. One, it hurts you. You don't grow. You right. don't learn how to develop the text. You don't learn how to work with it. And secondly, it hurts the congregation. Because honestly, why have two congregations? Steve's preaching in both of them. Why not just merge? They don't need you because you're not doing the job.
Well, years ago, I had someone accuse me of pulling sermons offline. And I will. Every so often, you know, you'll see a good idea for a sermon, so you'll grab it, you'll start developing your own. Okay, but most of the majority of mine were my own. Anyway, it just so happened that it was on the subject of dancing. And he said, yeah, I found a sermon just nearly identical to yours. And I thought, well, when you're dealing with subject like dancing, there's only verses. There's only so many ways you could package that up, you know. So you're going to find similarities on a subject like that. But what you're talking about a little bit different, though.
Yeah. Well, funny story with that is I preached a lesson on baptism, what baptism will do. And one of the older members came up to me with her Bible and says, you know, Brother Hugh preached that lesson with the same scriptures, but you said it a little bit differently. And sure enough, so I call Hugh. I'm like, now I know I did not plagiarize off of you, so we must have both plagiarized off of Floyd Thompson. but it's the same thing as, if you're going to talk about that subject, there's only so many verses you can do, and there's only so many ways you can order them. Yeah. But, you know, to your points, John, it's just, like you said, the guy who's too studious, well, you'll be neglecting the work of personal work. You'll be neglecting the development of sermons. You'll be neglecting the work of encouragement. And so, you know, there's a lot on a preacher's plate, even when we disregard all the unfair or wrong expectations and just focus on teaching. It's a lot. And I've said this a few times, and I'm not trying to be boastful or bragging here, but I'm convinced that most denominational preachers could not handle the teaching load of a preacher in the church, because most of them, they're preaching one sermon a week. And even the really, like, even the expository guys, it is their expository sermons sound more like our Bible classes sometimes. And even if they have two services, that's still half the workload of what members of the church expect. Because on average, we have two sermons a week, two classes, and we tend to alternate those classes. And members have an expectation that they will be scriptural, robust, and applicable. It is, I mean, Guillermo had told me when I first started preaching, says, you're going to feel like you're nearly drowning the first 5 years. I'm like, oh, that's great to know. But he's about right. Once they hit the 5 year mark, oh, okay, I'm starting to get a feel that I can do this and everything, and I'm getting a better handle on my time. It's just, you know, there's a period in which I would say mismanaging time is just part and parcel with you starting in leadership. You got to figure things out. But if it doesn't start clicking at some point, the problem isn't you trying to figure things out. The problem is probably you. And that's what you got to look for.
That's a good point. And by the way, you'll need to listen to this video here in about 20 years. Just make sure you agree with your younger self.
You know, let's. I want to just throw a thought or two out there to say, I think you guys have done a good job to talk about how, in particular, you know, this issue has a particular weight for preachers. You know, our, you know, how hard we work or how hard we don't work. And I think that is something interesting to think about, that typically when I observe a preacher, a man can step into that work and work as hard as he wants to, that he can find as much work to do as he wants to do. And I, And I would say, you know, the more you want to do, the better an evangelist you're going to be in so many different ways. But it does have that. That's one of the unique things about being an evangelist. It has the opportunity to put into it as much as you want to put into it. And yeah. You need to be somebody like that. I thought, though, it might be interesting to say that when we step to other types of church leaders, elders, deacons, and you talk about things like time management or laziness, they're still applicable in those situations. In particular, when you think, for example, of elders, one of the things a lot of elders struggle with is that they struggle with they work and they got to balance doing the work of oversight there. And that's tough. I mean, that's a pretty hefty thing, particularly since there's a lot of jobs that you get to. Elders are older. They have worked more. And that typically means they're in a higher positions in jobs and things like that, that have more responsibility. Not always, but sometimes they can even be retired at that point. But the point is that it becomes harder and harder without good time management to be balanced in how you approach those things. And so I would suggest that in some ways, good time management might be even more critical to one who's an overseer. Deacons, I would say, tend, you know, not for a good reason, but it seems like a lot of times deacons tend to be younger men. And I don't think that's the design of the scriptures. I think that's more of a tradition we have because we kind of think, well, when a deacon gets older, he should be an elder. And you know, I don't think that that would be an accurate assessment. But one thing to consider, too, is that deacons a lot of times also need to balance home life. You know, they have a responsibility to home. One of the things that I had as an alternative problems that, you know, leaders have is that they neglect their home a lot. I mean, we all know how many preachers whose kids end up not being faithful. And I think a lot of that tends to be with that they have not. With bad time management, bad balance, they've neglected their home, they've neglected their marriage, they've neglected their children. And that's true of elders, and that's true of deacons, that that truly those things are actually first on our list, that we have to realize that that's the first work given to any Christian. That, you know, I think when the Apostle Paul is telling us that we were created by his workmanship to do works that he prepared ahead of time, he goes on in the later chapters to talk about the work of being a husband, a wife, parent, child, employee, employer. Those are the works he's talking about. Those are the first works we're called to do. And that sometimes church leaders make those the last works that they do, and they become the thing that falls off the table when time doesn't allow it. And that's why good time management is so critical. That's why elders, deacons, preachers all need to understand that you ought to balance that time in, particularly, as I said, with elders and deacons who often have other jobs in there. It just needs to be understood. Nobody has the right to expect, you know, a full 100% of your time commitment. And especially you, though, you know, especially to that leader, you've got to not neglect your family, your home, and it needs to be understood that these roles are given. God doesn't have the expectation that when you become an elder, that's all that matters. That yeah. would be contrary to the Word of God.
Well, and to that point, Brian, I've gotten this advice from several different older preachers, and it's all been distilled from Brother Haley. He had always said to anyone who would listen, never get so busy saving the world that you lose your family, because not a single one of his kids, to my knowledge, remained faithful. And that was the biggest hurt and lament he had in his later years, was he was out there so busy preaching and debating and writing that he did neglect his family. And so I think a big antidote to a lot of these issues is spiritual leaders need to learn a two-letter word that spells no. You know where your priorities are at. You know, be there for the kids' yeah. little league. Be there for the graduation. Have the weekly date night. You know, take care of your own health, because when we order ourselves the way God would have us to do, and we prioritize the priorities that God has set before us, we are blessed. And that's not prosperity gospel. That's just how God has designed it. When you take care of yourself, the home, the work will take care of itself. Because so many times, we men have neglected the home or the wife or the children because, well, I'm needed at such and such, or the AC needs fixing at the building, or whatever it may be. AC can wait.
Yeah.
If you can't go, well, that's why there's a plurality of elders. See if somebody else can go. And if it's really necessary, yeah, don't get me wrong, if somebody's at their deathbed. But we can so easily convince ourselves that these things are necessary when really being with God is necessary, and being the fathers and husbands we're meant to be is necessary. So,
yeah, your child's band concert shouldn't be skipped because a brother has a crisis of something for a moment and wants you to come and spend about 2 hours with them. And, you know, there's a time and place, you know, and you're right. And there are things that clearly are important enough that you will from time to time. But if it's a regular habit, daddy didn't make it again because he's doing stuff for the church, you know, how does that pan out?
And I just read this Saturday in John's gospel where Jesus takes a little one and he says, anyone who causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it would have been better for him to have a millstone hung around his neck and cast into the sea. How many times has the faith of somebody been derailed before it can even take root because, well, the church effectively took my dad away?
Yeah.
He was more busy with them, and so there's already this bitterness or this antagonism that sets in because God-given roles were neglected.
Right. And the thing is, it may be legitimate. Some of those cases may be legitimate, but if the father doesn't exercise control over it, the kid's not going to see it with the same true clarity that's there. They're just going to know that, like anything else, dad's not home again, you know? Yeah. This whole Cats in the Cradle song from years ago.
Yep.
We did have one comment a while ago, and I missed it. It only came in 10 minutes ago on my feed. Gregor says, Paul made tents if needed. That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. Well, you know, there's not in any way trying to discourage anyone from preaching, but anytime you put into a role of what we would call religious leadership, there's a reason why Paul or James says, let not many be teachers, you know. And he may have had something very specific in mind with that, but there's so many things that can come into play. Religious leaders end up failing on so many different levels. And someone says, what's the evidence of it? Look at the denominational landscape. The denominational landscape alone, to me, exists because of the failures of those who would be viewed as religious leaders. And then look at local congregations, you know, both whether the failure of elderships, the failure of preachers, their families. And so if you follow the Lord and follow his instructions and pursue what he would have us to pursue, what's most important, tend to these things, you've already well covered it, then the religious leaders will do their job. And if they do mess up, if they stumble, they fall, then they step out for a season, maybe. Sometimes congregations are very forgiving and will say, you know, you owned up to it. You're working to change. We love you. We forgive you. We're going to work with you. But it's kind of like the wife. She takes her husband back the first time after he has an affair. She tries to work through it. But after about the fifth time, she says, that's it. You're gone. You know, can't trust you anymore. You know, and at some point, maybe that has to happen. But anyway, we just need to make sure that, one, as congregations, we help our religious leaders, support them, be there for them, you know, submit unto them. But at the same time, and there I'm talking about specifically elders. You don't submit to preachers or teachers, but specifically to elders. But help them out. You know, they're subject to you as well. If you see them doing something that is wrong, or maybe they're wrong on a point, don't hesitate to, with love, go to them and talk to them about it. Follow the biblical patterns and so forth. We're helping one another. Okay, anything else, guys? Okay.
No, I covered it well.
The chat room, well, I bet say the chat room was anything but chatty today, but we did have a comment come in. So let me go ahead and bring it in additionally. Let's see there. Let me find it. It's hiding. There we go. So Truth and Reason says, sometimes preachers and elders end up becoming a taxi service for brethren. It's good to spend time with them, but sometimes that time is abused. Now, that's a very interesting point, because there could be situations, I'll say it like that, where you end up enabling a situation because you're always there to bail them out. You're always there to help them do whatever it is that they never learned to do for themselves. But I'm not saying that's all the time, you know. But he's the comment there is right about that. We're there to help, but not to become servants in that level of capacity.
There's a reason one said something in another discussion I had with him once, where he said, you know, brethren, just expect us preachers to be schmoozing all the time. And, you know, we don't get a chance to do the rest of our work. You know, there's a little bit of truth to that.
Yeah. Okay, well, a lot more we could say, but I think we've probably gone long enough with this. So 2 weeks, we're going to be off our studies for 2 weeks. So let me double check the date on that. I think we are slated to begin our study through Galatians. We haven't done the epistles yet, or at least Galatians. So we're going to get into that study, and that should be on July. No, wait a minute. Hang on a second. Yeah. July 20th is when we'll start our next study there. So we're going to go through Galatians. We have a few more topical studies in our list, but we may shift some of those till after the Galatians study and then bring them in. Some of the future topical studies, we're going to talk about the Ten Commandments, kind of a question, what about them? We may look at dangers facing our children today. There may be something else that we can definitely look at. But do us a favor. If you have an idea for a study, whether it be problems that are faced in this area, that area, or just a topical idea, share them with us. We'd love to hear from you. You can send those, as we've said before, to questions@truthfactorlive.com. We'd love to hear from you. Share with us your thoughts and ideas for future topical studies and even book studies. You know, like I said, we're about to go through Galatians. We've already gone through some books of the Bible. You can find those in our playlist on YouTube. If you go to truthfactor.com, you'll look at archives up at the top, and it'll list all of our previous studies. But we'd like to hear from you. What would you like for us to study that you would like to join in and be a part of? So, about that. All right. Well, listen, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today, and y'all have a good 2 weeks, and we'll be back here again as we continue factoring the truth of God's word into our lives, and we'll do that by looking at the epistle to the congregations throughout Galatia. All right, so we'll see everyone here back here again July 20th, 11 o'clock a.m. Central Daylight Time. Y'all have a good week ahead. Bye-bye.